This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza Winnipeg Jets game day. Jets and Flyers at noon live from Wells Fargo Center. You can hear that game on TSN Radio 1290. Let's head to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by Tampa Bay Lightning insider Eric Erlandson. Eric, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. How are you?
We're doing well. It's a little bit early, but we're already halfway through the show, so we're powering our way through it.
Afternoon hockey games are great, aren't they?
I love afternoon hockey. I mean, after the game's over, you can take a nap and then get ready for your Saturday night, right?
Yeah, which probably includes more hockey, right?
Yeah, exactly. Eric, we wanted to start off by asking you about Yanni Gourde. I mean, there are a lot of great players on this Lightning team, obviously, starting with Kucherov, Stamkos, and Hedman. But Yanni Gourde, 26 years old, undrafted. He's now third in rookie scoring. What has impressed you most about Yanni Gourde's rookie season with the Lightning this year?
Wow, where should I start? First of all, he's a great story. Undrafted, kind of toiled his way through the ECHL, between the ECHL and the AHL for a couple of years, was cut loose by the San Jose organization in midseason. In March is when he was let go, and Julien Brisebois, who's the assistant GM here and also is the GM for Syracuse, stepped in and signed him right away and worked his way up. And, you know, we saw glimpses of it last year, but he's come in this year and he's really played a top six role. He's as feisty as they come, you know, for a guy who's about 5'8", 5'9". He's never the biggest guy on the ice, but he's always around the net. That's probably the biggest thing that you have to be impressed with Yanni Gourde. Most of those goals that he scored have probably come within 15 feet of the blue paint. And if there's a scrum around the net, Yanni Gourde's probably involved in it. He can kill penalties. He's on a power play. I mean, it's just what this organization can find. You know, Jonathan Marchessault was one of these players, and he turned into a 30-goal scorer with the Florida Panthers last year, and he's been a big part of the Vegas Golden Knights this year. You know, Yanni Gourde is the next kind of guy that, you know, this organization has found that has stepped in and been just a huge contributor to the top team in hockey, where I don't think you could have sat at the beginning of the season and thought he was a 20-goal scorer, but, you know, he's probably going to reach 25. He's at 24 now, and just very impressive that he's come in and really established himself this year.
You know, Eric, Andre Vasilevskiy has been just a story unto himself in Tampa Bay and how well he's played in net for you guys. Now, the question for me, though, is, and what I was a little surprised about, was how honest he was about battling fatigue. And, you know, it's not something we see from professional hockey players very often, is them admitting, you know, yeah, I'm a little bit tired. I'm finding it a bit of a transition now that he's the number one. Were you surprised that he was, number one, so candid? And number two, what is the plan moving forward for him in terms of giving him a little bit more rest?
I am surprised that he was so candid. You know, I mean, sometimes you do have to, because his English isn't great, so sometimes you do wonder if there's something lost in the translation between the questions that are being asked and the way he's answered them. But, he is, anybody will tell you in that locker room that nobody works as hard off the ice as Andre Vasilevskiy. He's usually the first guy at the rink. He's always in the workout room. So it's no surprise that in his first full year in the workload that he has, he's adjusting to it. And they're probably, at this point, probably telling him to kind of, you know, tone it back just a little bit. He started the game the other night, but did not take part in the morning skate. They probably had to tell him, do not go on the ice for the morning skate. So I think you'll start to see a little bit more of that with him. And then with 15 games left, it's going to be interesting to see, because Peter Budaj made a rehab start last night for Syracuse. And, you know, Louis Dominguez played well since Peter Budaj has been injured. But now that Budaj's healthy, it'll be interesting to see how they kind of rotate those guys at all. It's never an ideal situation to have three goalies on your roster, but it sounds like that's what they're going to do. So maybe with the three goalies, that'll give them a chance to maybe let Vasilevskiy catch his breath a little bit and maybe not have to carry a huge workload here down the stretch.
Eric,
the Tampa Bay Lightning have been a pretty competitive team over the course of the last five seasons. Now, I know they didn't make playoffs last year, but they always seem to end up getting these prospects that just kind of come out of nowhere, and not even out of the first round. I mean, you got Braden Point, who came out of the third round. I believe Tyler Johnson was just a free agent signing who wasn't even drafted initially, and you know he's been a big part of that group too over the course of the last 5 or 6 years. I mean, where are the Tampa Bay Lightning getting these guys, and what are they feeding them down there?
Well, maybe it's the sunshine down here. You know, you have to give a lot of credit to Al Murray, who's their scouting director, and the scouting staff that he has. You know, Steve Yzerman gives them a directive: go find them players that have hockey IQ and can think the game, and have competitiveness and character. And that's what they start with. That's the model that they look at, and then they work with the skill sets and everything else that they have. And the irony of the success that they've had as a franchise in drafting is their first-round draft picks haven't had the impact. Outside of Vasilevskiy, their first-round picks haven't had a huge impact. It's the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth rounds. Andre Palat's a seventh-round draft pick. You know, Braden Point is the third-round draft pick. Nikita Kucherov is a second-round draft pick. You know, but that's the model. That's what they've been told to go out and find. And that's why they can make a move like they did at the deadline, where they give up two of their top five prospects, because they're so deep. You know, they trade those two guys, and they have a guy that they just called up, Anthony Cirelli, who has a goal and assist in his NHL debut. He has a three-point game the other night against the Rangers. And it's just a constant pipeline that they have. There's some other guys that they have playing in their minor league team right now. You know, they had five players on Canada's World Junior team this year, or four players this year, five last year. And it's just the model that Al Murray follows what Steve Yzerman asks, and they go out and they find these players and they find a way to develop them. And it's really the lifeblood of the organization. It really is.
We're joined by Tampa Bay Lightning insider Eric Erlandson on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
You know, Eric, the Boston Bruins are hard charging behind the Tampa Bay Lightning, which is not something we thought we would say, because it looked like the Lightning were going to run away with the Atlantic and potentially the Eastern Conference. They've definitely, you know, outpaced the Metro, but you've got these Bruins now, three games in hand, 6 points back. Is it almost a benefit to not have such a huge lead for the Tampa Bay Lightning to force them to kind of stay in the present and not be looking too far down the line?
A little bit, yeah. I don't think there's any doubt. You know, I actually just spoke with Steven Stamkos yesterday, and, you know, one of the things that he brought up is they've had such a successful season. You know, and this is new territory for him as a player, to be on a team that is this successful, that knows they're going to make the playoffs. And sometimes it's hard to kind of get that emotion and get that edge up that you need on a nightly basis when you know that you're going to make the playoffs so soon into the season. So to have a team like Boston that's charging behind them, and they have three more meetings this year, starting with the first one is next Saturday here in Tampa with the Bruins coming to town. And that's one of the things that Stamkos pointed out, that, you know, we need some of those kind of games that we're going to have to be emotionally engaged in the game to the playoff type of level that they know they're going to have to get to in April. So I think it's good that they have the Bruins pushing them. It gives them something to kind of target for. And the amazing thing is that Tampa's gone 8-0-1 in their last nine, and they barely pulled away. In fact, they might even have lost a point to the Bruins in the standings here. It's just amazing what the Bruins are doing, especially right now with no Patrice Bergeron. Tuukka Rask missed a couple of games. Now they're without Charlie McAvoy. So to me, it's a good thing that the Bruins are kind of pushing them a little bit.
Ryan Callahan, he only played 18 games last year with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and honestly, I thought his career may have been coming to an end maybe a little bit, but he's came back this year. He's played 58 games. He's on the fourth line with the Lightning. Is that kind of more his role now? Is he officially, you know, a fourth line player at the age and time in his career?
I don't necessarily think that he's a fourth line player. I think he's a fourth line player on this team for a couple of reasons. First, they're so deep up top. As we talked about earlier, the depth that they have scoring-wise, especially in the top six and the top nine. He's played some top 6 minutes this year. He's played some games with Steven Stamkos on his line. But I think the biggest thing with Ryan Callahan is sometimes you have to save players from themselves, and we know how hard Ryan Callahan plays the game. And if you limit his minutes now in the regular season, he can take on more of an expanded role when we get to the postseason, because he's that type of playoff performer. Him and Chris Kunitz are kind of built from the same mold. And you want those players at their best, at their peak, when you get to the postseason. So I think that's a little bit as much of anything behind Callahan's limited minutes, because he still has some offensive skill. We've seen it at times this year. He's been snake bitten at other times this year. So he can still score. He's getting some power play time. But to me, they just holding back his minutes so that he's ready to go when April gets around, because that's where this team is now. You know, where they can kind of limit guys' minutes like this in the regular season, because you know you need them in the postseason.
Eric, final question for you here. I have to ask you about Braden Point. He scored an overtime winner against the Jets earlier in the season. He scored the overtime winner the other night in that epic game between the Lightning and Panthers. He's having an unbelievable year. He's up to 27 goals, 57 points on the season, and that's after an incredible rookie season. Is it sometimes, you know, hard to believe that just 2 years ago he was playing for the Moose Jaw Warriors in the Western Hockey League?
Yeah, it really is. You know, the funny thing is you know, when Erik Karlsson's name was being passed around as a potential of coming to Tampa, and Braden Point's name was brought up as going back the other way, that pretty much ended the conversation. And that tells you the importance that Braden Point has on this team. You know, he does so much. He takes on the tough defensive assignments most nights. And then you look at his offensive totals, and you look at it and, you know, see the importance. I mean, he's got more goals than Steven Stamkos. It tells you how important of a role he has on this team. You know, kills penalties, plays on a power play, plays 20 minutes a night. You know, and this is a guy, it's unbelievable to think that he's in the second year of his entry-level contract. He still has one more year left on his entry-level contract, and the important role he's already playing on a team that's been at the top of the standings for almost the entire year. Again, it's such a credit to the team scouting staff to select a guy who was passed over because he was undersized and there were some questions about his skating. And now you look at him and the important role he plays, and he's finished second to Connor McDavid at the All-Star Game in the fastest skater competition. So such a credit to the organization to bring him in, and a credit to Braden Point to work on his game to the point where now he's an integral part of the top team in the league.
Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, my pleasure, guys. Take care.
All right, have a good weekend, Eric. All right, let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on a Winnipeg Jets Santa Lucia game day on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Lindholm back to the outside. Teuvo Teravainen holding onto it, shadowed by David Kampf. His shot scores! Seeing eye shot by Teuvo Teravainen. Rube talks it over with the referee. We'll see if it was tipped or not. It's a power play goal, and Carolina has a 3-2 lead.
We are back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. It's a Santa Lucia pizza game day. Jets and Flyers coming up in about 4 hours from Philadelphia, Wells Fargo Center. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the IC Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Guys, this segment, we wanted to talk about Ron Francis, the news that came out. We were actually live on air on Wednesday when the news came out that owner Tom Dundon was moving Ron Francis from his position of general manager to president of hockey operation. I think a move that surprised everybody, especially considering where we are in the season and the fact that the Hurricanes are still in the playoff race right now. The Hurricanes might be a bit of a long shot, especially with the way the Florida Panthers are playing, but certainly they're still in the playoff conversation. Wanted to play this clip from earlier this week, the insiders, Pierre LeBrun and Darren Dreger, talking about who the next Carolina Hurricanes general manager might be.
Well, obviously still very early in the process. This just happened. But, you know, as of today already, looking at different candidates, talking about internally. And, yes, they've begun the process of making phone calls. Don Waddell, the team president, is really spearheading this effort on behalf of owner Tom Dundon. I think you're going to hear some of the usual candidates over the next couple of weeks. Julian Breezeboy in Tampa Bay, Paul Fenton in Nashville, Lawrence Gilman, the former Canucks AGM, Dave Notis, Tom Fitzgerald, Ryan Martin, and that's just to name a few. I think that Tom Dundon wants to get this right, wants to talk to a lot of people, and wants to go into it. I spoke to Tom Dundon today with an open mind, not have too sharp a focus as it begins.
Now, it sounds like
you know, having an analytics background is going to help in this process, because we know that Tom Dunnan certainly likes that, and he has supported that in his business dealings over time. So that brings Kyle Dubas of the Toronto Maple Leafs into the equation. Kyle Dubas has a very strong resume, but he's important to the Toronto Maple Leafs moving forward, and there are some who believe he could be the next general manager for the Toronto Maple Leafs. On top of that, Dubas is believed to be highly compensated, so the Toronto Maple Leafs likely aren't willing to give him permission at this stage to speak to the Carolina Hurricanes.
And I will say this, and it's not so much as a warning, because I think it's obvious now, but whoever the guy is that's the next GM of the Carolina Hurricanes, know that Tom Dundon is a hands-on owner. He wants a free flow of communication. He wants to know why decisions are made. And he wants to have a structure in place, as he told me today, where there's that free flow of information between everyone involved. By the way, he wants Ron Francis to remain part of that as president of hockey operations. But the new GM has to know that he's coming into a place where an owner wants answers perhaps every day.
There's Pierre LeBrun and Darren Drager, the TSN insiders, talking about who the next general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes might be. It was reported by Pierre LeBrun yesterday that the Hurricanes have asked for permission to speak with LA Kings assistant general manager Mike Fiuta, whose name has come up previously when there have been vacancies for general managers around the National Hockey League. So, guys, first of all, what were you thinking when you heard the news earlier this week that Ron Francis was moving from general manager to president of hockey operations? And who do you think would be a good fit as GM of the Hurricanes? It's obviously very new because we just found this news out 3 days ago.
You know what? I think the biggest shock was that this is the first move more than a coach being removed from the NHL. I mean, to me, you know, we're at a point now in the season where you haven't seen any coach firings, and now you have a GM being relieved of his responsibility. So I think that's what caught me off guard, was just that, you know, and again, I'm not suggesting that any coaches need to lose their jobs, but again, that's something we're more used to seeing than a GM in the middle part of the season, especially one who's, you know, in theory, only been there since 2014 when he took over for Jim Rutherford. So I was a little bit surprised, because Carolina's managed to accumulate quite a bit of talent in terms of their drafting, and they've got Charlotte Checkers have a nice little team going down in the AHL, and you've got some young prospects who are now taking on bigger roles in the NHL, and you know, perhaps maybe some of their moves on from the goaltending perspective haven't necessarily worked out. And it seems like Tom Dundon, the new owner, has really kind of, you know, I was reading an article the other day calling it the Vegas effect, how Vegas comes in, and because they're having immediate success, it makes someone like Tom Dundon say, well, if these guys can have immediate success, why does it take a rebuild of 3, 4, 5, or 6 years to do? I mean, to me, I would suggest that Vegas is the anomaly. It's the exception to the rule. It's not the rule itself. So I'm, you know, more of the idea that in the NHL, you know, depending on what your situation is, there's no one size fits all. But realistically, you look at a Jets team, you know, that came in here from Atlanta, and Atlanta used to have a tendency to rush their prospects, Zach Bogosian, Evander Kane, Alexander Bomestrov, all these guys who are high-end picks. Rather than developing them in the American Hockey League, which is, to me, a more tried-and-true model, they would rush them into the NHL, and then you have a lot of guys who have some deficiencies that really you can't work on in the NHL. So to me, I think that we're more used to seeing more of a longer-term vision, a longer-term plan, and allowing that to kind of unfold, and it seems like Tom Dundon wanted to go a different way.
Andrew, do you think Kyle Dubas makes sense in Carolina? You're in an organization right now alongside Brendan Shanahan. Do you want to go and take that job knowing that Tom Dundon is going to be so involved?
I mean, I wouldn't. I know that. But I think Kyle Dubas is actually a great pick. If, you know, granted, the Toronto Maple Leafs gave him permission to speak with the Hurricanes. But, I mean, I think he's just done such a great job in Toronto since the Shanahan plan came in. Between, you know, drafting and, you know, getting rid of some pretty awful contracts with Dion Phaneuf and Phil Kessel. Even though, I mean, Kessel, he's a terrific player, obviously, but still just had some high salary, you know, that they had to clear out of the way to really get that rebuild going. And it's clearly paying off. I mean, the Leafs have a lot of prospects. I would say, you know, second, maybe third best in the league behind, you know, you could throw the Jets in there and whoever else you want to talk about. But I mean, I don't know. Yeah, if Kyle, like you said, you know, when we're on break there, I don't know if Kyle Dubas would want to leave the Leafs, given how much success he's had.
He's in a pretty good situation there.
He is. I mean, absolutely. He's, you know, Shanahan's right-hand man. The Leafs are looking good this year over the last couple of years. A lot of young talent there. Still a lot of growing to do there as well. So who knows if he'll stick around for that or maybe try and move on and look for bigger things.
And the reality is it's so early that you hear all of these names thrown out there. Julien Brisebois is a name. A very intelligent assistant general manager, Paul Fenton.
I was just going to say,
who is David Poyle's right-hand man, assistant general manager of the Predators, former member of the Winnipeg Jets. Yeah. I mean, you could easily put together a list of 10 to 15 names, and right now it's just too early to really know who Tom Dundon and Ron Francis are going to go with, but it was certainly a very surprising move by the Canes at this point in the season. We're going to head to break, boys. When we come back, we're going to be joined by our very good friend Aaron Portsline in Columbus. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Third and final hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And it's only 8:02 in the morning. Are you guys still awake?
Yes.
Ish.
I had to think.
Ish.
Let's hit the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
Aaron, are you wide awake?
Awake, I would say.
Because I'm not sure if Andrew and Dave are. I might be losing them here.
Yeah, I'm a little drowsy.
Aaron, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us today. We want to start off by talking about the Red Hot Blue Jackets, and specifically defenseman Seth Jones. He's got 5 points in his last two games, and we've talked to you many times over the years about Seth Jones. He's one of the best young defensemen in the game. What have you noticed about his game this year that's just taken it to the next level?
Yeah, I think the next level for him is that you don't even need the word young in there now. It applies, but he's not just one of the best young defensemen in the game. He's one of the best defensemen in the game. And when he came to Columbus, you know, it wasn't that long ago, but the growth in his game, I mean, the minutes have shot up because he's not buried on the depth chart like he was in Nashville. But other things have changed too, like, you know, it was so easy in Nashville to sort of get comfortable in games when Weber and Yossi and those guys are playing big minutes at the top. He needed to assert himself more. He's claimed a leadership role here in Columbus where he feels like he has to be the best defenseman every night and set the tone from there. His defensive game, his physical game, all of that has come up big time. And the offensive skills, the gracefulness, the power with which he plays, it's all there. It is a joy to watch him play hockey. And I think for people in Columbus, the one thing that they really respect about him is a lot of guys have had up and down years. They've had long stretches where they've struggled this year. It's taken Columbus a long time to get going. He's been one of the guys that has been a real standout performer from day one.
No, Aaron, there were some curious comments from Coach Tortorella the other day that kind of caught national attention in terms of, you know, talking about guys already kind of having their focus towards the end of the season. Now, you're on the scene there in Columbus, so how did you take those comments to be?
Yeah, he's actually said it a couple times, and the first time it was not quite as pointed as it was the second. I pressed him on it a little bit yesterday, like, because he was saying, you know, guys have had long seasons, they've had tough years. And he's sure there are guys in the room, I'm paraphrasing here, but there are guys in the room that would just like this thing to end. That, you know, they see the playoff line, and maybe if they don't quite make the playoffs, it's okay because they can just put this thing behind them after 3 weeks. I know it rankled a few guys in the dressing room, and he clarified a little bit yesterday. He's not saying that these guys or dogs, or that anybody in the room doesn't want to make the playoffs. What he's saying is that it has been a long, frustrating season for a lot of the Blue Jackets players. And there's an inclination, if you've been at something for a long time and it hasn't gone well and you feel like you've not succeeded, to just kind of look for a reset and look for an opportunity to walk away from it and try again later. And he's trying to foster with a lot of these guys, it doesn't matter what's happened in the first 69 games. It doesn't matter that the power play is so poor, that your numbers are so poor, that the penalty kill has been so brutal for a long time. It's been better lately, but all of this stuff doesn't matter at all, because look where you are now and create something from now going forward. He's trying to frame it that way. He is so honest. I think that it works against him sometimes because so few coaches and people in the spotlight are so honest now that he gets himself into trouble with it. It was really an interesting comment, and I'm curious as to see how that thought sort of fosters as we move along here, if that he still feels like that feeling is in the room here of the win.
Cam Atkinson has he's had a a career where he's been putting up more and more points throughout every year. You know, especially in goals last year. I mean, he tallied 35 total. This year he's had a quite the drop off. He's got 13 right now in 53 games. Can you maybe just tell us a little bit about where his game has been recently?
Yeah, and he's got 3 goals I think in his last 5 or 6 games. Just to get to the point, he's one of the guys. Frankly, and Tortorella didn't mention names, but he's one of those guys you think, I wonder if that's who he's talking about. I wonder if Wendberg's who he's talking about, because he's another guy that's had a real drop-off. I mean, as you said, Atkinson has played 6 years in the league and scored more goals each year, which is a pretty rare thing. And he's just gone through the floor this year. And a part of it was he missed time with the broken foot, but he was struggling before that. It just hasn't been there. He hadn't scored his first power play goal until February, which, he had 10 of them last year. One of the guys, Boone Jenner's in there, 30 goals 2 years ago. He's got, I think, 7 now. Foligno's dropped from 26 to the low 10s. I think he's got 11. It's all over the place with this team. And when you look at the way some of these guys' production has tumbled, the fact that they're 7th in the East and in the first wild card spot is amazing, and it speaks to some of the surprise seasons that other guys have had.
We're joined by Aaron Portsline of The Athletic in Columbus on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Aaron, the Blue Jackets don't play tonight, and they're actually off for another day. Next game is against Montreal at home on Monday night. And if you look at their schedule, it's interesting because they have a lot of games coming up against the Atlantic Division. You've got the Flyers coming up on Thursday. But when you look at the schedule, you've got a few easier games against the Habs and Ottawa, and then you've got that tough back-to-back against the Bruins and then Rangers, and then next Thursday you've got the Panthers, who are chasing the Blue Jackets right now. Is it safe to say that these next 6 games are going to go a long way in determining if the Blue Jackets are able to get into the playoffs this year?
Yeah, we were just joking last night. This surely has to be the first time anyone has said, it's a huge game between Florida and Columbus next week, isn't it? No one has ever said this. It's been. I think you can look at it that way. In Columbus, the schedule is, compared to the other guys, is pretty helpful. New Jersey just has a brutal schedule here. The next, I think they play like 6 or 7 on the road, and they come home to like Tampa, and then Pittsburgh, and then Pittsburgh again. I mean, they have a really difficult schedule. And I think if you're the Blue Jackets, that right there is the best argument for them getting in. The other argument has been that the teams around them, and the Islanders were with them for a while, and now 8 in a row they've lost. They've gone goodbye. Carolina was right there ahead of them for a while. They just got rid of their general manager, quote, promoted him, if you will, and they've faded. They're sort of the last man standing here, but they got a hold of Florida for sure. New Jersey's a team I think they've started to think about. They go catch them rather than worry about what's trying to catch them from behind. Because, as you said, the Blue Jackets schedule is pretty light, I dare say that. And New Jersey's schedule, again, is really, really difficult.
Aaron, how would you describe Pierre-Luc Dubois' season? I mean, we know he started off a little bit slow, but, he looks like he's the top line center from our perspective out here. Has he really blossomed? I mean, sometimes we forget he's only 19 years old and in his first season in the NHL.
Yeah, he's, you know what, in many ways, he's been a savior for this team. And that's a big word. And, the points don't blow you away like some other rookies have come into the league. But, man, oh, man, when you think about where this team would be without him this year, Wendberg's taken a big step back. So has Brandon Dubinsky, who's now their fourth-line center. He's actually playing on the wing of the fourth line now. Wendberg has slid to the third line. If Pierre-Luc Dubois had not been able to play in the league this year, had not found a click with Artemi Panarin, I don't think this team even stays above water because so many guys were struggling to score. For the longest stretch, the only line that they've had all season has been Panarin, Dubois, and whoever is on the right side of them right now. It's Cam Atkinson. But it has, I mean, they weren't sure what they were going to get out of him this year. Their plan was to keep him up here for the whole of the season, but not move him to the middle until the midpoint of the season. And they just couldn't wait that long because of the struggles across the roster, because of some of the injuries they had. And he's gone in and has been a real stabilizing player for that. And more recently, I mean, they were on that West Coast trip, and Ryan Kessler is doing, as John Tortorella likes to say, Ryan Kessler thing. And Dubois just stood right in there. I mean, he is a big dude. I think he is ahead of the game for them as far as how they thought he was going to develop. So absolutely one of the bright spots for them that has kept them in this game.
Aaron, Columbus was pretty active at the trade deadline, acquiring a couple forwards in Thomas Vanek and Mark Letestu, and also acquiring Ian Cole as well. You know, they've all scored so far for the Columbus Blue Jackets. So do you see these three players fitting in quite nicely for the Blue Jackets, and will they help this team get far in the playoffs?
Yeah, you know what is really quietly a really good trade deadline for Yona Tukulainen, and he acquires those three guys. I don't think any of them jump off the page as world beaters. You know, it's not the Ryan McDonough acquisition, certainly. But he didn't give up anything off the current roster to get any of those guys. And I think they all can play pivotal roles. The one guy who's emerged really quickly is Ian Cole. Comes from Pittsburgh, the rival Penguins. Has won two cups. Was in a frustrating situation at Pittsburgh. Has been scratched a few times. He has become a really interesting player on the back end for Columbus. A physical guy who has stepped in on the scrums already, which is something that they have. It's been an issue here in Columbus. He has brought an air of toughness to them. I think he can only add fuel to this rivalry with Pittsburgh. Letestu is just such a Swiss Army knife, has been that in every spot he's been. They can play him everywhere. They do play him everywhere. And I think for John Tortorella, helps give him a bottom six that he had last year that could be productive, that could be flexible and used in many different ways. And Vanek, you know, there's a reputation with Vanek for not exactly passionate play all the times, but, you know, pops in two goals the other night in a big game, a big necessary win against Colorado. Kind of a wild card. I'm not sure where he fits ultimately. Right now he's playing with Boone Jenner and Alexander Wendberg, which is sort of the guys that haven't fit anywhere else this year line, if you want to call it that. But if he is productive, he's got 19 goals this season, he's certainly a guy that they can use. There's some depth there now at forward as well.
We're joined by Aaron Portsline of The Athletic in Columbus on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Aaron, we wanted to ask you about Ryan Murray. He missed nearly 3 months of the season with the Blue Jackets. How has he looked to you? Is he starting to get more and more comfortable as he gets more games under his belt after returning from that injury?
Yeah, you know what? He's such a likable kid. And with a touch of gallows humor, he noted the other day that, you know, he's gotten pretty good at coming back from injuries because he's had so many of them through his early career. And it's amazing how the kid misses long stretches and steps right in and looks like he hasn't missed time at all. Such a talented player. And you wonder how much the injuries have set him back in his early career. When he plays and stays healthy and is able to just go, he had an 82-game season a couple of years ago. He is sort of a defenseman for the time in the sense that he's not a big guy. He's not a super physical player. but a really elusive guy and a splendid puck mover. Maybe the best passer on this team. And yes, I know Werenski and Jones are up front, but Murray's ability to pass the puck out of his own zone, put it right on the tape, is really special. He is, he's a wild card here. I mean, the Cole acquisition, big for them, but Murray coming back in and playing with Jack Johnson on the second pair, that has been a big issue, a big impact for them since he's returned.
Right, getting away from the Blue Jackets, but keeping in with the theme of hockey in Columbus, you know, seeing Jack Roslovic's success, and he, you know, now he's jumped from the AHL where he was tearing it up and was probably, if not the most dominant player in the AHL, one of the most dominant players. And now seeing what he's been able to do, jumping in, playing, I think, 26 games now with the Jets, what does that do for hockey in Columbus? Because we know he's a kid who has a strong connection to his hometown, and just what does that kind of do now? Because now you've seen him, it's more visible because, you know, the AHL is still impressive, but now that he's in the NHL, what kind of what does that visibility do for hockey in Columbus?
Yeah, it only helps elevate it. I mean, he's the first guy born and raised here to be a first-round draft pick. I mean, it's crazy, but R.J. Umberger was the first guy to do that in Pittsburgh, and look how long the Penguins had a team before that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not easy. We're talking generations it takes. But Roslovic is a big part of the local hockey scene. Sean Corrali in Boston has become a regular now. Connor Murphy is in Chicago a regular after a pretty good start to his career in Arizona. Columbus is a hockey market, I think, beyond what most people realize. The Ohio State men and women's hockey team have had wonderful years this year. There's a splendid AAA program here that cranks out tons of college kids and pro kids every year. You know, Columbus drafted Carson Meyer last year, a local kid. That just doesn't happen as quickly in a lot of U.S. markets, especially quote-unquote non-traditional. This is a better hockey market than most people realize. Jack Roslovic is a big part of that. He is, you know, you look at the faces of the kids at the AAA program. That kid comes around in the offseason. That kid is here for practices and goes on the ice with the kids, and there is absolutely a connection. And a big, you know, the kids see that and say, that's not that far away. He isn't that old. Like, that could be me if things go well here. He is a huge pain of pride for people in Columbus, Ohio.
Aaron Portsline covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for The Athletic in Columbus. He's also a good friend of the Curve. Aaron, thanks very much for joining us this morning, and go back to bed if you want.
Oh, no way. There's too much going on. Yeah. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. Take care, Aaron.
Thanks, Aaron.
All right, we're going to head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's a Santa Lucia Pizza game day on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
So, he'll wheel out against Dumoulin, that long reach in evidence once again. Great look for Ovechkin. Score! This game is tied at 4.
That was Ovi scoring one of his 40 goals. This segment of the show is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Over the past 20 years, Keener Jerseys has established itself as one of the best jersey customizers in the world. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or visit their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue and tell them Illegal Curve sent you. Boys, Brian McClellan was re-signed by the Washington Capitals recently after getting the Capitals into the playoffs every year since he took over as general manager. I think it's no surprise to anybody that the Capitals re-signed Brian McClellan. But what I thought was interesting about this signing is that Dauphin Manitoba's Barry Trotz, the head coach of the Capitals, is in the final year of his contract. And I think he's one of the best coaches in the NHL. I think we'd all agree with that.
I do.
And you look at what the Nashville Predators did under his tutelage. They were a perennial playoff team. The question I have for you guys is, are you expecting Barry Trotz to be signed? And are you surprised that the signing of Barry Trotz wasn't announced at the same time?
Yeah, I was. I like Barry Trotz. I think he's a very good coach. I think he's just a likable guy. He's one of those fairly forthright coaches. When you're having a scrum with him, he'll like I said, he'll tell you what he's thinking. He'll be pretty honest with you. But So I was a little surprised. I mean, again, you know, we're seeing some of the coaches go into that situation, like a Paul Maurice, where you have that, you know, that lame duck kind of label, if you will, and some coaches are willing to have it and put up with the questions from the media, having to answer, you know, fairly consistently about whether that impacts them. And, you know, look, they're going to say, most likely they're going to say, no, it doesn't impact me. But the reality is that level of uncertainty does have to have you a little bit nervous because, you know, you're coaching and you that's what you want your focus to be, and you don't want to have to be thinking about a potential axe dropping on your head at any point if your team loses two games in a row, three games in a row. So that has to weigh on you at some level, and you hope that it doesn't allow it, you know, it doesn't allow you to impact the way you're coaching. And the fact is, Barry Trotz has been in this league long enough, in my mind, to not allow it to impact him. And knowing that he's the type of coach who, even if he was let go by Washington, would be, in my mind, in my estimation, although probably right now there aren't any availabilities, would likely be snatched up pretty quick.
Andrew, I want to get your opinion as well. I want to read this quote from an article from Isabel Kershudian of the Washington Post. She mentions, though the Capitals have won the President's Trophy twice under Trotz with stellar regular season success, they haven't gotten past the second round of the playoffs. The sense is that Washington's front office will wait until after the season to make a decision on Trotz, who is the fifth winningest NHL coach of all time. I don't know if a lot of people know that, by the way. Though Trotz is a lame duck, as Dave mentioned, his top assistant, associate head coach Todd Reirden, is under contract for one more season. So, Andrew, knowing that Barry Trotz is a lame duck coach for the Washington Capitals, doesn't that make you kind of think that it depends on how well the Capitals do in the playoffs? That's going to determine if Trotz is signed to another contract?
I definitely think it is dependent on that second-round curse, you know, that everyone talks about every year as soon as the playoffs do start. He's a 2015-2016 Jack Adams winner, just constantly getting whatever team he's coaching into the playoffs with some pretty fantastic records as well. He hasn't quite got the Holy Grail, but I truly do believe that he will be re-signed if they make it past that second round. If not, I mean, it might be the last season for Barry Trotz, but, you know, you can guarantee he'll have a coaching job somewhere else in the NHL.
And guys, why should we believe that this year is going to be any different for the Capitals? I mean, we know that the Pittsburgh Penguins are the team that always seems to get in the way of the Capitals. And you look at that defense, and, you know, it's great for a guy like Madison Bowie of Winnipeg, who's gotten a full-time job now with the Capitals. But you look at some of the defensemen they've lost over the years, Carl Alsner, if you want to throw in Kevin Shattenkirk in there, Nate Schmidt, they lost in the expansion draft to the Vegas Golden Knights. Dave, why should this year be any different? Why should we think that the Capitals are going to go any further?
It's a good question, Ezzy. And you know, to me, it probably begins and ends with Holtby. I mean, he's such an elite goaltender, and sure, that right now they're giving,
he struggled as
I was going to say, and right now they're giving him a bit of a rest because, you know, they're talking, and it was interesting. I sent you the link. I think the Brian Johnston, the former NHL goalie, was talking about.
I didn't read it.
No, I know. It was more of a text. Sorry,
I'm a busy guy, Dave.
Yeah,
come on.
No, I realize. You had to be in bed by 9 o'clock, unlike me. So the truth is that he was talking about fatigue and goaltenders and how it isn't just necessarily a physical thing, but there's also a mental component to it, and how it's important to really give him that kind of time away to kind of, you know, reset. And we were talking about it with Andre Vasilevsky a little bit earlier about how these goalies, especially now, it's funny how people think, oh, well, you know, you the travel isn't nearly as difficult, especially in the East versus what we see in the West. But the travel isn't the same. You fly first class everywhere. You have, you know, the best hotels. You have everything. But the reality is that, you know, as you know, we don't see those Arturs Urbes. You know, we've talked about that Arturs Urbes, right? Type numbers really from goaltenders playing, like, although Cam Talbot did it, but 75 games in a season anymore, because the truth is while the goaltenders sure have gotten better, so have the players, and there's a lot more wear and tear on these guys. So his point or his position was that it's probably a good thing for a goalie like Holtby to have that opportunity to reset and kind of retool a little bit and get ready for a long postseason run. Because to me, if you're going to have one, you need him to be the player that he is, which is an elite-level goaltender in the NHL.
And don't get me wrong, I think the Capitals should re-sign Barry Trotz. I mean, I think we all agree. He's an absolute living legend when it comes to coaches. And I think you look at what he's gotten out of players like Tom Wilson, and he's gotten out of players like Dmitry Orlov. I mean, Dmitry Orlov was a sixth or seventh defenseman, and now he's a top four defenseman on defense. And even though I don't know if the Capitals will get past the Pittsburgh Penguins or go far, I do think Barry Trotz should be re-signed because I do think he is the best man for the job, but we'll have to wait and see. We're going to head to break, guys. When we come back, we're going to be joined by University of Manitoba Bisons women's goalie, Lauren Taraschuk. The Manitoba Bisons are in the national championship. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. It's a Santa Lucia pizza game day. Jets and Flyers coming up at noon.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by University of Manitoba Bisons women's goalie Lauren Taraschuk. Lauren, good morning, and thanks for getting up early with us and joining us today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Oh, no problem at all.
Lauren, we wanted to go back a couple of weeks to that epic game that went to four overtimes. I believe it was the third longest game in Canada West history, if I'm not mistaken. And you got a shutout in that game. Can you just take us back to that game and the joy that you felt after winning that game and your teammates felt?
Yeah, for sure. I think throughout the whole game, we were just focused on one thing, and we had one goal in mind, and we wanted the outcome to be us as being the winners. And I think as soon as that third overtime hit, we were just so focused on scoring. Like, we just wanted the game to be done, and I think we really stuck to it and put our tired legs aside and just focused on getting that goal for our team.
Now, Lauren, as a Winnipegger, what does it mean to put on that Bisons jersey? How much pride do you put on or do you get from being able to wear that uniform?
A tremendous amount of pride. I think it's not only putting on the jersey, but also going to the rink every day and getting the privilege to live at home, and just how much easier it is for me. And like, I realize that not many people get the luxury to live at home, and just going to the rink every day is such a big part of my life, and I absolutely love it every day.
Lauren, you posted some pretty incredible numbers this season, posting 5 shutouts in 12 games. You had a 0.71 goals against average and a .961 save percentage, which is just unheard of. Was there any? Did you have a different preparation, you know, heading into the season at the end of summer, I guess?
No, I really stuck to my game and just not really changing anything because I'm really confident in the way I've been playing in the past years, and just to carry it over to the Bisons was pretty important for me, and just keeping my, you know, game day routines the same and the way I work out and the way I recover, just keeping it all the same, not changing anything.
We're joined by University of Manitoba Bisons goalie Lauren Taraschuk on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Now, the Bisons are now preparing to play in the 2018 U Sports Women's Hockey Championship. That's hosted by Western University. That starts March 15th and it goes to the 18th. What's it been like with all this time off, you know, preparing? Is that a good thing, or are all the women ready to get this thing going?
I think it's been both good and bad. We really needed the time to take to recover ourselves and get the rest that we needed, because we did play a lot of hockey, especially in that four overtime game. But also, we're just so ready to go and get there and just see what it's all like. We were so excited to win the championship, and we were glad to celebrate that. But I think it's also time to move on and focus on the next task at hand coming up this week.
So, Lauren, what kind of reaction have you noticed around the city towards your victory?
It's been bigger than we've all expected. I think Bison sports don't get as much recognition as they probably should. And I think with our games and the amount of fans at our games, it's really brought a lot of attention to our sports and what we're really able to do for our university and for our city. And I think it's just been incredible for us, especially as a team. We appreciate the sport so much.
And okay, I think I read that you switched from defense to goaltending. Why did you make that change?
Obviously, it was a good one.
Yeah, but no, when I was about 6 or 7, my older brother is 2 years older than me, and he played hockey as well. And so I'd be that little sister at the rink all the time, running around, watching the game. And I just started to fall in love with the goalies, and I think it was honestly the attraction of wearing the equipment and getting to wear that, and I think it just, like, followed through. Like, I wanted to be a goalie. And so I played part-time defense goalie when I was 8. And then I fully switched when I was 9 and never looked back since.
We're joined by Lauren Tereschuk, Bison's goalie on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
Lauren, you know, you talked about the atmosphere in the city, you know, after that big win. What was it like in the arena at the time? I mean, I seen a few Snapchat videos, actually, and the fans were going absolutely ballistic. And, you know, did they stay as late as the players had to?
Oh, yeah. I don't think anyone left. I think they were so committed, and it was, the rink was so loud. I just remember, like, there were some points I couldn't even hear the whistle on the ice because it was just so loud in there. And especially for us, like, it's not a very big rink, but when it gets full, like, it just, the whole rink erupts, and it was just so cool seeing that.
Lauren, the 2018 Winter Olympics obviously recently ended. Canada wasn't able to take home the gold. Unfortunately, they lost to a pretty darn good American team. Mm-hmm. Shannon Sabatos, goaltender for Team Canada, is that someone that you look up to and you kind of want to maybe duplicate, you know, her career path?
Absolutely. Last year when I played with the Winnipeg Avros, we actually got the chance to meet her. We were in a tournament, and she came into our dressing room, and so myself and my goalie partner actually talked to her. And so just seeing what she's done for Team Canada and all her accomplishments throughout the years, I think it's really big for me, and she really stands up to me and something that I strive for, and seeing her in the Olympics is definitely a goal of mine. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that's something I was going to ask you about, Lauren, is how much of that goes into your daily focus? You know, the idea that you could one day put on a Team Canada jersey and play in the Olympics for your country.
I think for right now, I mean, it's something in the back of my head for sure, because not a lot of people get that opportunity. But right now I have 1 year at a time to focus on, and I just take it year by year. And then if the time comes, or when the time comes, then I focus on that. But just sticking true to myself and just playing the game for right now, how it is, and then just focusing on that if that opportunity comes.
We're joined by University of Manitoba Bison's women's hockey team goaltender Lauren Tereschuk on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290. Lauren, you're a first-year student at the University of Manitoba, and wow, what a first year for you with the University of Manitoba Bison's mm-hmm. going to the national championship. What's it been for you to still be in school and also, you know, focused on preparing for this national championship? Is school still, you know, taking up a big majority of your time? And is it hard to focus knowing that, you know, the team is competing and trying to bring home that national title?
Yeah, definitely. I think since the beginning of the year, our coach, John Rempel, has really drilled it into our heads that school is priority and school comes before hockey. And so I think really keeping that in mind, I have to keep my school ahead of hockey. But it definitely has been tough balancing my schedules. I mean, I get up early, don't get home till after dinner. So just staying like mentally focused and mentally prepared every single day has been key for me. But I think just balancing this week, I've had a bunch of exams. And so just focusing on my exams and then knowing that we get to go to London on Monday is just, then I'll be able to focus on hockey and get some homework in where I can. But I've really pushed myself this week to get everything done so we can actually focus at nationals.
Now, Lauren, you had a teammate return just before the championship game with some extra, you know, hardware in her luggage when Van Lahove came back with a medal from South Korea. You know, just how inspiring is that for your team to see someone who had just, you know, won with her team and still managed to get back and play in that championship game for you guys?
I think it just shows to our team and proves to our team that how dedicated she truly is and what our team means to her. I mean, being there in Pyeongchang was definitely like a once-in-a-lifetime thing for Venla, but the fact that she got on the plane and spent almost 24 hours traveling is huge, and it just shows our team that she's willing to do anything to help us out, and she truly did help us win this championship. So, no, we absolutely love her.
Lauren, I want to talk about Coach John Rempel again. And, you know, he's saying that he had an impact off the ice, you know, making sure that the homework's done and, you know, you're prepped for the exams and all that. What kind of impact has he had on your playing career so far this season on the ice?
I think from day one, he's really focused on my confidence and just making me confident out there and being a first year. I mean, he let me know, like, I'm behind Rachel Dick, a fifth year, and just to be patient. I mean, both my coaches really said, you just have to be patient, trust us, and you'll get your time when it comes. And so I think the biggest part for me was he's really given me a chance, and he's given me an opportunity to show what I'm able to do. And he's never really given up on the fact that I am able to play in like a CIS hockey game. And so he's really been a big, part for me, just keeping my confidence where it needs to be and just letting me play.
Lauren Tereschuk is the goaltender for the University of Manitoba Bison's women's team. She was recently named the Canada West Female First Star of the Week. Lauren, we really appreciate you coming on the show this morning, and best of luck in the Canada U Sports Women's Hockey Championship, which starts next Thursday in London, Ontario.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Lauren.
Right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Lauren. All right, let's head to break. When we come back, one final segment, and we're going to be talking Manitoba Moose. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
And it's on to Robinson, then forward, Scarbosa. They're in the Admiral zone, left side, up on the play. Pullman's in front, they score! What a goal! Tremendous effort from Tucker Pullman, and finished by J.C. LaPont.
Final segment here on the IC Hockey Show. This segment of the show is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Final segment, we're going to spend some time talking about the Manitoba Moose. They're in action tonight against the Chicago Wolves. Puck drop is 7 o'clock. You can hear that game, of course, here on TSN Radio 1290. Our boy Mitch Peacock will have the call. The Moose have been on a bit of a slide lately, Dave. They've lost 3 of their last 4 games. They're currently up 4 points on Chicago in the Central Division, still first place in the Western Conference. I wanted to specifically ask you, Dave, about Sammy Niku, who got the game-tying goal against the Wolves. They obviously weren't able to pull out the win. But what have you seen from Sammy Niku, who is not only leading all rookies in defenseman scoring, but he's leading all defensemen in scoring?
Yeah, well, we'll start with Sammy Niku. I mean, Sammy Niku has been such a miraculous find for this team. I mean, the fact is that, you know, we're talking about a guy who was drafted in the 7th round in 2015, and he's just been such a bonus. His skating is phenomenal. His hockey sense is, in my mind, is off the charts. Positionally, he's very good, and again, he's such a good skater that he can get to where he needs to be. In my mind, the only limitations with Sammy Niku is, like anything, it's just age. It's just physical maturity. I think it's a function of just having patience with the process. And I think that sometimes we, in an instant gratification society, haven't, you know, anticipate guys jumping immediately. And if they don't jump, then they're busts. And we saw this with Josh Morrissey and, you know, oh, why is he playing in the AHL? Well, he's playing in the AHL because he needs to develop and he needs to learn. And the truth is that when you play in the NHL, a mistake you make is you know, analyzed 3 different ways from Sunday. When you make a mistake in the AHL, I'm not suggesting that it's not a big deal, but the reality is that it's not going to be analyzed to the same degree because, as Coach Vincent often says, this is a developmental league as much as it is about winning. So these are, especially with a team like the Jets, who are, require development to be such a big integral part of the kind of the mantra of the organization, that's important. And so allowing a player like Sammy Niku to blossom in the AHL and do what he's doing is super important for the organization, simply because from a developmental perspective, that's how you're going to have guys come in and eventually replace a Tobias Enstrom. Now, I'm not saying that Sammy Niku is going to come in next year and replace Tobias Enstrom, but in 2 years, that's possible. And so to me, that's what you want, is you want to have a conduit from your American Hockey League into your National Hockey League team that allows these guys to develop properly, not rushing them through the process. You don't want to, like, look, the truth is Jack Rozovic has made the jump to the NHL, but if Jack Rozovic was left in the AHL, I mean, me, to my opinion, again, I watch them every time they're in Winnipeg, he'd be the most dominant player in the AHL, or at least one of them. You know, one of the top 3, but I think for sure one of the most dominant players in the AHL. That's a good thing. That's a good thing for your prospects to have. Now, necessity forced him into the NHL, and you know, is he doing well in the NHL? Yes. Is he every day and every game growing stronger in his game? Absolutely. But at the same time, if he was left in the AHL and he was flourishing the way I think he would have this season, then how much better would his confidence have been for next year when he if most likely jumped to the NHL full time? So to me, I just like that as a developmental model, is allowing these guys to kind of flourish within that system. Now, to your question as to what's been going on with the Moose lately, you know, it's an interesting question. Is like they've been very good, but now the other teams are catching up to them a little bit. And again, that's a function of
still first place in the conference.
Absolutely. But the truth is that you know, kind of like Tampa Bay had such a huge lead and nobody was even close to them, the Chicago Wolves, which is why tonight's game is such an interesting one, have kind of quietly crept up. And I was talking about it with Mitch a couple weeks ago, and to my mind, I think they've picked at least 20 points up on the Moose just how well they've been playing. And they're on quite a tear right now. Even yesterday, they were up over Milwaukee. They've got a tough 3-3. The Moose are sandwiched in between that. The Chicago Wolves do. So they played at Milwaukee last night. They beat them 4-3. They came fly home into Chicago. They played Allstate Arena tonight. That it really is a huge game, though, because the Moose have been such a good team on the road. This is a team that, you know, even against Milwaukee the other day, they were down 2-0 early. It was one of those weird games. It's the school game. The kids play at 10:30 in the morning. The bus, you can hear it when you're listening to the broadcast. There's busloads of kids that are in the stands. So it's a different sort of game. But I think this is a time where the team kind of needs to, you know, really kind of find what their core strength is. And again, that's a little bit now that Eric Comrie's back in net, because they had a bit of, obviously, turnover there in terms of Jamie Phillips was kind of the goalie because Eric Comrie, because Michael Hutchinson and Steve Mason were out. So you had Eric Comrie backing up Connor Hellebuck. You had Jamie Phillips as the goalie. Now Eric Comrie's back in. You look like it was going to be Michael Hutchinson. And that, to me, is probably the best goalie tandem in the AHL, along with Sparks and Picard in Toronto.
And Dave, I would assume Eric Comrie gets the start tonight against the Chicago Wolves. Do you expect maybe Jamie Phillips to get the start tomorrow at Iowa? And how concerned are you that with Michael Hutchinson kind of yo-yoing back between the Moose and the Jets, are you concerned with that, or should you not be concerned about that, considering that Jamie Phillips has done a great job with the Moose backing up Eric Comrie?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be super concerned. I think it's twofold. Number one, Eric Comrie is the goaltender prospect that you want really playing. I mean, the reality is Michael Hutchinson is a very good goaltender in the AHL, so if he's playing for you, that's not necessarily a bad thing, especially if something happens to Comrie or if he falters. But the fact is that, you know, again, going back to that idea of development, if you're looking at this from the perspective of allowing this core group to develop, then Eric Comrie is the guy you want to kind of live and die with. Now, having said that, to me, the value for why you keep Michael Hutchinson and you didn't trade him was because if you need to, you can use him in the playoffs and really give this team an opportunity to go on a long Calder run, because I think that there is a tremendous amount of you know, growth that this team can experience, similar to what happened we saw in St. John's with that group when they went to the Calder finals. I think was it 2011-12. So the fact is that, to me, I think you're going to have an opportunity here for a Moose squad to make some noise in a playoffs situation where you're going to give these guys an opportunity. And again, we, you know, we have a tendency to focus on the guys who make a lot of noise in terms of stats, but, you know, a Michael Spacek, I mean, this is huge for him. Mason Appleton is huge for him. So you've got all these young players who are going to get experience in addition to your veterans, you know, the Buddy Robinsons, the Patrice Cormiers. But again, those aren't the guys you're developing. You're developing the Sammy Nikus, the Mason Appletons, the Brendan Lemieux, that sort of idea. So to me, to give those guys an opportunity to make a deep playoff run. Now, and again, depending on what happens with the Jets, you could still get Jack Roslovic back. He is eligible to play for the Moose for the playoffs. They did make that paper transaction during the final day of the trade deadline day. So Roslovic is eligible to play for the Moose in the playoffs if need be. And I think right now this is a very good Moose squad. I think that if they have a guy like Jack Roslovic on the roster, it takes him from being very good to an elite Moose squad.
Dave, I wanted to ask you about Nick Petan. Since he's been sent down to the Moose, I know he's been picking up points. What have you liked about Petan's game? He was up with the Jets for an extended period of time. And how do you think he's been handling the demotion to the Moose? Obviously, he'd probably rather be up with the Jets, but now he's playing a significant role with the Moose and hopefully going on a long Calder Cup run.
Yeah, you know what? I think he's handled the move as well as you can be expected, because, I mean, again, as these guys all want to play in the NHL, nobody says, oh, I'm okay playing in the AHL. And that's not a slight to the American Hockey League, but everybody wants to play in the best hockey league in the world, and that's the NHL. So he's handled it fine. And again, I think his creativity has been allowed to flourish under Coach Vincent. I think Coach Vincent hasn't really restrained him from that perspective and allowed him to kind of, you know, use what it is that Nick Batan's strength is, which is, again, his vision and his ability to create. So I think from that perspective, he's been allowed to kind of blossom within the Moose organization and been given a key role. I mean, he gets a lot of power play time. So to me, Nick Batan is a player that, again, this team is going to rely on come playoff time, that they need really kind of firing on all cylinders to make that deep run.
Another guy I wanted to ask you about, Dave, is Buddy Robinson. He's having a career year in the American Hockey League. And we've talked about this before on the show, how valuable his leadership has been. He has the NHL experience. He obviously has the American Hockey League experience. In your opinion, I mean, there have been other players that have led the way offensively for the Moose, but what has his consistency meant to this team? Because we mentioned, I mean, you watched the Moose more than anybody, and Buddy Robinson, to me, is a player that the Moose just didn't have in previous years.
No, that's exactly it. He brings a lot of versatility. And, you know, especially on the penalty kill, him and Patrice Cormier have created quite a dynamic duo when it comes to penalty kill. I mean, he's a big guy. He's a smart player. He gets a stick in the lane. So he really is a valuable asset for Coach Vincent when you're talking about killing the penalties. But not only that, they've set up quite a number of opportunities for shorthanded goals. So to me, he is, you're right, as a player that the Moose haven't really had the luxury of having on the roster. He's got the most goals with 23. He's hitting career highs. And again, I think that's a function of depth. I mean, it's a function of having the right kind of veterans and the right kind of, you know, this is a Moose team that has, you know, a fairly spread out offense, which is obviously necessary because if a guy goes on a bit of a dry spell, you want to not be relying on one guy solely. But Buddy Robinson has provided, assets for the team, both offensively, defensively. And as you touched on, Ezzie, he's got that veteran experience. He played some playoff games in the AHL. So to me, he's a guy who really kind of gives them that edge in the sense that that's not something they possessed previously. And so now you have that in addition to the young guys who have stepped up and taken big roles with this team.
We've got a couple minutes here, guys. What are your keys here for the game coming up at noon between the Jets and Flyers? We know that these games usually start off a little bit slower, but Andrew, you first. What are you maybe looking forward to in this game between the Jets and Flyers? We don't see the Flyers very often, but what do you think some of the keys to the game are for the Jets facing a pretty desperate Flyers team that has lost three in a row?
Yeah, I definitely think matchups will be crucial this game. Just, you know, giving the bottom six that the Flyers have, and, you know, they don't have the greatest third-pairing D-man as well. So I think matchups are definitely going to be important. I'd like to see some secondary scoring too out of the Jets. They seem to be lacking that a little bit over the last couple of weeks. But no, it should be a fun game and a wild one.
And, you know, to me, if you like, what I'm really interested to see is the chemistry between Brian Little and Blake Wheeler. I want to see if that renews itself and how quickly they're able to kind of rekindle what we've seen for years from those two. So that to me is really the interesting thing, because, you know, we know what we're going to get with a number of the other lines and we, you know, the defensive pairing. So we're really anticipating is, you know, we expect the Stastny line now. We expect Patrick Laine probably to get his 40th and 41st goals, maybe even his 42nd, who knows. But, I mean, his play right now is next level, and it'll be interesting to see if he can keep that rolling.
Now that's going to do it for us for today on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to Andrew Brown for joining us very early this morning. Andrew, was awesome having you on the show today.
Well, thanks for having me on, guys.
Big thanks to James DeRoschuk for producing the show today. Big thanks to Dave Manuk, obviously. Big thanks to all of our guests. Back in the first hour, James O'Brien of NBC's Pro Hockey Talk joined us. At 7 o'clock, Anthony Sanfilippo of CrossingBroad.com joined us. Eric Erlinson, Tampa Bay Lightning insider. Big thanks to him for joining us. Aaron Portsline of The Athletic Columbus in the third hour, and of course, Lauren Taraschuk, University of Manitoba Bisons women's hockey team goalie, joined us about half an hour ago. Big thanks for listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show today. The afternoon ride is coming up next.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.